You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, where your host is Dr. Janine James, Brother Quojo Robinson, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Cotney. The program is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Email them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. And I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of their programs are archived. Just go to the website, www.timeforanawakening.com. Use the search portal and put in the keyword, elders.
This is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
We're poor, Ashe. We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe. We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who break the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions, the children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us for your children and children's children. Let's say some of those famous names.
Kwame Ture, Honorable Elijah Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John Dr. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Shining your light.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, where your host is Dr. Janine James, Brother Quojo Robinson, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Cotney. The program is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Email them at sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. And I repeat, sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. All of their programs are archived. Just go to the website, www.timeforanawakening.com, use the search portal, and put in the keyword, elders.
Welcome, listening audience. This is Charles Robinson. I'm going to be one of the co-hosts for tonight's subject. And together with Dr. Janine James and Sister Dee Dee Connolly. And we're going to be talking about a subject that I'm sure everyone is going to consider important, the subject of violence. Can the violence be prevented? What do we need to know to prevent that? What do we need to do to prevent this violence that's plaguing our communities day by day? Our guest is Brother Zachary Johnson. And also, we're going to be having another guest who hails from the continent of Africa, Brother John. Let me get this. John Sentamu, who's also the director of the Good Shepherd Primary School. So what we're going to be talking about is going to involve the root. We're going to see if we can get to the root of this violence. And it looks like it might involve inquiring about our educational process and the history of our ancestors. So at this point, why don't we hear from our co-host, Sister Dee Dee Connolly, who wants to share information about one of our ancestors, the ancestral profile of Megger Evers. Sister Connolly.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Peace and blessings, family. And I want to share. A story on Megger Evers. And I chose him because we're still doing some of the same things that our ancestors fought for 30, 40, 50, even 60 years ago. So I just want to give like a little brief something on Megger Evers. Born July 2nd, 1925 in Decatur, Mississippi. Megger was one of four children born to James and Jesse Evers. His father worked in a sawmill, and his mother was a laundress. Evers' childhood was typical in many ways of Black youth who grew up in the Jim Crow South. That was pretty rough too, from what I've heard. Very rough. Anyway, back to my story. He grew up in the Jim Crow South during the Great Depression of the 1930s. And in the years preceding World War II, as a youth, Evers' parents showed him love and affection, taught him family values, and routinely disciplined him when needed. The Evers home emphasized education, religion, and hard work. Among his siblings, Evers spent most of his time with his brother Charles, whom he idolized. As Evers' older brother, Charles protected him, taught him how to fish, swim, Hunt, Box Wrestle, and Jennery served as a sounding board for many of Megger's earlier experiences. He attended an all-black school in the dual and segregated public education system of Newton County, segregated public education. Public education meant long walks to school for the Everett children. The schools had few resources and operated with outdated textbooks, few teachers, large classes, and small classrooms without laboratories and supplies for the study of chemistry and physics. And some of those classrooms are just like that even today. The kids have outdated books and everything. Besides his underfunded public education, Everett on occasion saw and witnessed acts of violence against blacks. On those occasions, Everett's parents and older brothers could not shield him from the realities of society built on racial discrimination. At about the age of 14, Everett observed to his horror the dragging of a black man, and his name was Willie. He was behind a wagon, and they drug him through the streets. Then he was later shot and hung. A friend of Everett's father was accused of. He was a friend of Margaret Everett's father, and he was accused of insulting a white woman. Lord have mercy. Everett later recalled that the man's body and clothes remained in the field for months near the tree where they hung him. Each day on his way to school, Everett had to pass that. Oh, my God, that was sad. He never forgot that image. I imagine he didn't. Family, I just wanted to, just read a little bit about Margaret Everett. And Margaret Everett worked for the NAACP, and he was shot down and killed in front of his home on his way home from one of the meetings. And I just wanted to give a little brief meeting. I mean, I just wanted to give a little brief talking about him. I didn't want to take up a whole lot of time because I want to get off into our program. It's going to be such a good program and so just so interesting. So I just want to get into it. Thank you so much, Brother Charles.
Yeah, thank you, Sister Dita. That ancestral history is so important. You know, you've probably been reading the newspapers and the media, following the media now. Some states don't want to teach the truth about America's history. But we need to know that truth so we can stand on the shoulders of our ancestors. And speaking of history, we have Brother Zachary Johnson, who is someone, he's been so dedicated in the nonviolence movement going back 50 years. He's invested single-mindedly pursuing the truth about violence and how we can eradicate it. I've been knowing Zachary for, probably 30 or 40 years, and he was a practitioner of mindfulness practices. He knows a lot about trauma and violence, how it affects the body and how it affects us as a community as well. He began his journey with becoming a member of the original Hebrew Israelite nation. I didn't know that about Zachary. Over the course of 50 years, he started out working for the Black Health Coalition back in 1992, and then he continued to do the work of nonviolence, and he organized a program called the Living Experiment in Nonviolence, which combines the latest hard-nosed evidence of modern science with the highest sacred teachings that prevailed over the golden, joy-filled ages when entire centuries of Black African generations came and went without a single drop of blood being spilled in murder or war. we're going to get into some of that that history and some of those practices and religious orientation of the ancestors that would have them live without violence. And then later on in the second part of the hour, second half of the show, we're going to have Brother John Sintamu, John Sintamu, who hails from Uganda, and he's the director of the Good Shepherd Primary School of Masaka, of the Masaka District in the nation of Uganda. So at this at this time, why don't we...
Brother Charles, I want to just inject a little bit here. I share the excitement about having our brother Zachary Johnson talking about the subject of violence in this way, particularly because we're talking about someone who is not just talking about violence, not just giving us some statistics, but thought enough about this to try to come up with some strategies. And realizing that this is a worldwide problem, he has reached out to others throughout the world who are talking about this issue. And as you know, as we were preparing our program and our ancestral profile, and we were discussing about who would be our person to select, and it didn't really dawn on me until just now as I heard Sister Didi review with us for some and teach some others about Medgar Evers' life. He ended it violently. He's not just an ancestor. He's not just somebody who died. Somebody took his life. So I think that he is, in that regard, besides his historical perspective of what he did, but he also met his demise at the hands of someone else. Mm-hmm. And so I think that he is, in fact, among perhaps those individuals that do need to be remembered from that perspective. And so I join with you, Brother Charles, in welcoming our brother Zachary Johnson in this discussion. And I'm going to let you lead out with that. Brother Charles, we're so glad that you stepped in and helped us today. And look forward to the conversation. And Brother Zachary, we're so happy that you're here with us today.
Thank you, Dr. James. And thank you for selecting this topic to be the discussion tonight. The Sankofa Council, as you know, is continuing our attention on legacy building. And, you know, violence, of course, continues to plague our communities, as I mentioned earlier. With the inclusion of our youth as the perpetrators now, and also the victims. And this problem that, you know, that must be studied by and resolved by us, the people who live in the community. And so the Living Experiment in Nonviolence is an attempt to do just that. And so that's why I welcome my brother, my friend, Zachary Johnson.
And you could add to that your student, because I've learned a lot working with you, Brother Charles, over the years. You have a tremendous impact on my thinking and tremendous influence, and you've always been an example to me of a person who has been a lover of peace. Ever since I've known you, everything you've done has had something to do with peacemaking and help make our community a better place. So I want to thank you for sharing this time this evening. Also want to begin by giving homage and honor to the Sankofa Council for their gracious hospitality and allowing us to join them here this evening. And I listened very carefully to Sister Dee Dee's story. Perhaps you might like to know that not only was Mega ever murdered, but the town where he was murdered in gave the assassin a parade.
Hmm.
Literally gave him a parade.
I had no idea. I didn't know that. Wow.
I did
not. Marching band, and cheerleaders, and the mayor was there. The whole town turned out to celebrate the murder of this great black man, as if they had killed a deer or something. So America, it's the truth. It's the absolute truth. I was shocked to learn it myself.
Thanks.
So altogether appropriate that we're giving homage to this great man. He was an example for all of us, because he risked his life knowing that his life was in danger, knowing that he had young children, but he was called on to serve, and we're called on to serve, even in this time of dangers and threats, where they're literally trying to take our vote away again. They're trying to turn back the hands of time. 40 states have passed legislation to make it harder for people to vote. We should be beyond all that. That shouldn't even be a topic. But we are in danger, so that makes the this subject of love and compassion even more important than ever. If we're going to survive through this, we're going to have to learn how to love one another. And teach our young people how to stop killing one another. Treat each other with respect. And that's what we hope to get at least one step closer towards this evening. So we're very excited to be here and very honored to be here, to be able to share this time with you this evening.
Yeah, that project that you created, the Living Experience of Nonviolence, and it's centered on love. The basis of that is love, and love is the most powerful force, one of the most powerful forces got to be in existence right now. So how do we use that? How do we end the violence? What do you have in your toolbox? I know you brought some things in your toolbox a couple of months ago when you shared with us. And, you know, when we look at ending the violence, the question is, can it be stopped?
I'm glad you asked that. The question is, can violence be stopped, or can it be controlled and managed? And the answer lies in the fact that violence is predictable. It is predictable. We can almost anticipate that before the night is over, someone here in this community is going to lose their life to violence, and all over the country. So anything that's predictable is preventable.
We just had a homicide last night over in the Sherman Park area where I live. We just had one last night.
I've literally been watching this for 10 years. I watched it for a living. And in Milwaukee, you can almost bet your paycheck on the fact that there's going to be a homicide every 3 days. So, what has to be done, just what the facts say, is we create the conditions that make people violent, cause people to be violent. So we're going to have to create conditions to help people learn how to be peaceful.
Can I stop you for a minute? Well, I want to revisit what you said earlier about if it's predictable, it is preventable.
Absolutely.
So if we could predict predict violence, like somebody's going to be murdered tomorrow or the next day, you're saying that that's preventable because it's predictable.
not on an individual basis. I'm saying we can create an environment where it's less likely to happen. One of the most interesting events since I've been in this kind of work, they had what they call a safe night. This was years and years ago. And it was over 50 churches throughout the city, 50 churches and community organizations decided to have a safe night on a Friday night. And they invited young people to come in, and they had talent shows and, you know, fun things for them to do. What they've been doing, they've been monitoring the children's hospital. Because usually when there was violence among very young people, teenagers, they usually end up at the children's hospital. That weekend, when they created a healthy alternative for the community, there were no shootings among young people. So you have to create the environment that you have to create peace. Just like you can create violence, you have to make for peace, make for a peaceful environment. Now, the long-term strategy would be to approach violence as a public health problem. America has a magnificent track record dealing with addressing public health problems.
Now, I know Dr. James can relate to this because she's a medical physician. So you're talking about if it's a medical health problem, you're going to get into the diagnosis and the prognosis and the prescription and all of that, right?
We're speaking her language.
Okay.
And that's precisely what the public health approach does. Traffic deaths have been cut in half over the last 30 years because the law changed to require people to wear seatbelts. And the law enforcement joined in with the public health community to encourage that, and became ingrained in our national habit. And now traffic deaths have been greatly reduced since they first began doing that back in the 70s. The same thing happened with childhood diseases. The whole thing we're going through now with immunizations, you know, there's a long history of that. And things that children died from 30 and 40, 50 years ago, smallpox, measles, chickenpox, children don't die from that anymore because we systematically immunized. In order to go to school, you have to be immunized. So those childhood illnesses have been all but eradicated here in this country. And almost worldwide in many cases. Certainly, Bill Gates has a lot of things he's done not so good, but one of the things he did was take his money and invest it in eradicating polio on a worldwide basis. And now they're down to a few cases in scattered places around the world. It's almost been eliminated as a human problem. And we can do the same thing with violence. It's just a matter of investing the resources, the time and energy, and focusing the attention, the necessary attention on the problem. We can influence people's behavior for the better.
Now, if we bring this closer to home, you know, you and I both have the same community in common. We grew up in 5-3-206. And that is the most incarcerated zip code in America. And as a result, there are a lot of unintended consequences of incarceration, which includes breakdown in the family, unemployment, and violence.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the economic impact of that, what are you finding?
Well, one of the encouraging things is there are tools available now that were not available a short time ago. One of the things that's become widely available, and one of the things that we've been pursuing, is what they call fMRI brain scanning technology. They have equipment now that they can look at the brain, look at what's going on inside the brain, and recognize people whose lives have been traumatized, that will show up in the brain scan. So now we're talking about an exact science. So we can work with people who have been damaged in life, and we can do the things that help them become resilient again. There are many things that can be done. Many cases, behavior grows out of people feeling hopeless and helpless. If we can develop the outreach that can make people feel supported, they don't do desperate things. We have to walk the Christian walk, just like we talk the Christian talk every Sunday. We're going to have to become Christians for real every day in the way we treat the most challenged members of society. I believe one of the reasons they letting this violence go is because the perception is, well, it's just poor black men, you know. And there are some black people who would just assume that that group of people die off, but they are part of our society. They are our cousins, nephews, uncles. They're part of us. Yes, they have challenges, but it's just with the grace of God, there go I. It could be you or I in that situation. If it hadn't been for a twist in the road here or there, we could easily be in that situation. So I think we have a moral obligation to reach back on the young men, for example, who are caught up in the criminal justice system and create healthy options to help them find a better way.
Yeah, it looks like there's a vicious cycle. I'm sorry, Sister Dee Dee, you were going to say something. Dr. James.
Mm-hmm. Particular. Things there every day, and we've been seeing shootings on the expressway, and there was a report that the way that this was going to be prevented was through the purchase of several million dollars worth of high-tech cameras. And so the thinking is that we, if we have cameras that can look at the license plates of the people riding on the expressway, then that is going to prevent the shootings on the expressway. Well, it seems to me that's after the fact. And that obviously I wasn't at the table, but certainly we would begin to do some profiling of certain kinds of violent events. And as you were saying, a particular communities, let's say, that have high violence or high numbers of young people who have seen violent acts, or those who are not in school, you create an MO for them, which may be a way of reaching those individuals before some of these crimes are committed. And hopefully have some conversation that serves to redirect the thinking of individuals before they commit a crime, before they create the next victim. So I think that if we really want to do something about it, waiting until after the event happens only allows you to pick up the perpetrator, perhaps, and to prosecute them, but it doesn't prevent the violent act. And so I think we have enough data that would allow us to know who is at risk of being a victim and who is at risk of being a perpetrator. I'm going to stop there. But thank you, Brother
Jonathan,
for bringing this up.
No, that's very much part of the subject. It's not an accident that usually when they start talking about young black men especially, usually the conversation somehow gets around to sending people to jail. That's the only thing America can come up with when it comes to our young black men. We're saying that, yeah, okay, if you send these guys to jail, if you haven't addressed the problem, if you haven't addressed the root causes of the problem, you're just going to have another group of violent offenders come along down the line 5 or 10 years later. It's like a person who has crab grass in their front yard. You can cut the crab grass, but if you don't treat the roots, you don't treat the lawn, you're going to have crab grass again next year. And if we create the perfect storm, the perfect situation where you have a whole generation of young people who have been who are morally challenged, who've grown up in an amoral environment, who have low expectations of themselves, low expectations of their behavior, and where violence is actually rewarded. Violence is the currency out in the streets. We have to come up with other ways to make our community a healthier place to live. And that's one of the reasons I'm so inspired by Brother Sintami, who's going to be here in the second hour. He wants to create a whole village of peace. And it's interestingly enough, the people in that area listen to him because he built the school. And so the parents think a lot of him, and he wants to bring the parents into the educational process and have them take some of the burden of learning off the teachers. He feels that family, that learning, that the whole family should be learning at the same time. And taking in this culture of peace and creating a place where peace is encouraged, where you're rewarded for being peaceful. You're rewarded for being kind. Today, we have a just the opposite kind of environment. And I believe it's at that grassroots level that we have to start working with if we want to see our communities become more peaceful.
So are you suggesting or are you saying that in Uganda, in the area where Brother John Sintami resides and created this the school district, he's the director of the Good Shepherd Primary School of Masaka District, you're saying that they're having the same issues that we're having in America with
they're
violence?
The exact same issues. Well, they don't have access to pistols like we do, but there is a violent violence is accepted in this society. You know, particularly his concern is the way the men treat the women in that
region. So they have a lot of domestic violence there.
They have a lot of domestic violence. And it's pretty much accepted because traditionally, under colonialism, the black woman lost her social status, lost her social protections. So they do feel it's okay to beat your woman, you know, that's part of being a man. And that's misguided, backwards thinking. You know, no nation is going to prosper that does not respect its women. And he understands that. And so I have so much admiration for Brother John because he started this school on his own because he felt that the system that existed was not helping. They teaching them about American history and European history. They right in the heart of where civilization began. They should be studying their own history.
Now, isn't that ironic? Yeah, I was reading something about the, well, I actually looked online and saw this YouTube video and where he was, someone said, they used the example of, why would you teach these children the history of Napoleon instead of their own history? So they, you know, see themselves as belonging to a legacy, see themselves as people of worth.
Uganda is at the outer edge of what's called the Great Lakes region of Africa. and the scientific world unanimously accepts that that is where the history of the human family began. So they ain't got no business worrying about Napoleon or George Washington. They have their own noble history, full of dignity and self-respect. You do need to know about European history. I'm not saying don't learn European history at all, because that's part of the world we live in. But you most definitely need to put the emphasis on your own history, on your own culture, and your own values, so that you have a sense of self-esteem that you've contributed something to this world, and you're just as good as anybody else.
Yeah. Especially if your history goes all the way back to the cradle of civilization. Sister Dee Dee has, she's chopping to the bit to get in this conversation.
Oh my goodness, I'm it. You know what? Both of you good brothers, when you said, it made me think about what Malcolm X said. Just about everything we've learned it from our oppressors. They taught it. We picked it up from them, you know. And there's so many bad habits, but we've learned it from them. And then again, Malcolm X said, only a fool will allow his enemies to teach his children. So I don't understand. Also, Brother Charles and Brother Zachary, maybe you all can help me with this. Why are we still now in these schools are not teaching our children or our Black story and not his story? And not only that, what do we have to do to change the curriculum? How do we even go about that? And like you said, our children have no business learning about old, I want to call him a name, but I'm not, Christopher Columbus and all that other old garbage. You know, I mean, our children know nothing about our Black, African, Jamaican, our Black history, our story. Nothing. The only thing we know, especially those older ones, watching Tarzan back in the day, as Dr. Ben said, he used to watch Tarzan, and before you know it, he was hollering. Until he found out the real deal, then he said he was mad enough to whoop Tarzan's butt. All the stuff that we've been programmed with, we've just been programmed, and now it's so hard to deprogram. And look what our children have to look at. What's that thing named Nas and all that? Look what our children have to look at. And it's so hard for us sometimes to even get to our children, because look who's babysitting our children, the television. And then they got the phones glued to their hands. And then you have some adults that think some of the stuff they looking at and listening to, and some of the parents are rapping harder than the kids.
We have the systemic and structural causes of where we are right now, and then there's also the personal responsibility part.
Yes, we should be teaching. We should be teaching at home first.
And Sister Dee Dee, I have to remind you, we have a sponsor announcement we've got to make before we move.
Oh, that's right. We got to pay some bills, don't we?
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Well, our sponsor is eDoc Advice, and it's a website which is created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health and medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that makes sense to you. And their website is www.edocadvice.com. It's www.edocadvice. And at WeDoc Advice, we don't try to replace your health professional or provide you care but we can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. We network with other health professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. edocadvice.com.
And then,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say, family, everyone's been really kind of good at muting the phone, at muting our phone, you know, so we don't hear all the interruptions, because our mics pick up every little thing. So please, can we mute our phone? And then I just also want to say, if anybody has any questions or comments, you can hit us up at SankofaMKE@gmail.com. Any questions or comments, please hit us up at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. Thank you, family.
All right, we're coming up to the second half of the hour, and eventually we're going to have Brother John from Uganda to be with us. But we got a couple of minutes before the top of the hour, and I wanted Brother Zachary to talk about, like, if we go beyond 1619, if we have history going back before 1619, and maybe even go 8,000 years ago, what would it look like in terms of how we acknowledge the concept of God? I noticed on your website you addressed that 8,000 years ago, what did God look like?
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Well, the oldest deities in Africa were all female. There were no gods. Africa. The oldest societies in Africa were what you call matriarchal, which meant that the family name was passed on to the daughter. When a couple married, the man left his clan and joined the woman's clan so she could stay protected. The family wealth was passed down to the daughter, but the daughter was expected to take care of the parents in their old age. So the roles were completely flipped around. And that society, I believe that's the reason the society lasted as long as it did, because it was stable. There were no orphans, and there were literally no widows. And if you just listen to the language today, when you're wrestling with somebody and you're trying to make them submit, what do you make them say? You make them say uncle. Because in ancient Africa, the uncle was had the primary responsibility for his sister's children, not necessarily the dad. So,
wow. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Zachary. Wow.
That was reflected in all the oldest religious orders of the Nile Valley and as far west as the Akan people in West Africa. They worshiped the female goddess who had precedent over the male gods that eventually began when the male gods started to appear 5,000 years ago. But up until that time...
So the female goddess was over the male gods.
There were no male gods in the beginning.
Oh, they were? Okay, got it. And you can find this depicted in the art in Egypt and some of the ancient writings?
It's very clear in the writings. Even up until the time of the beginning of the dynasties, that's when there began to be an emergence of male dominance in Egypt and all over the planet, as a matter of fact. Now, that's something scholars need to examine. We don't know why. All of a sudden, in every place, male gods began to replace the female gods, almost all at the same time.
Wow.
What happened to make that sudden shift? And what was behind that? That's something we need to learn. I don't know.
Wow. So, Brother Zachary, is that where the unk came from? Because, you know, is that the symbol? Well, they say that that's the symbol of life and also of the female god?
It is a symbol of life. And I would imagine because supposedly it's shaped like a female organs.
Right. Okay.
And that would make sense. It would certainly make sense.
Yes, it would. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, it's 7 o'clock, and at this time we're going to have a station break. And Dr. Rogers is in charge of that right now.
When you're on the street.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, where your host is Dr. Janine James, Brother Quojo Robinson, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. The program is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Email them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. And I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. All of their programs are archived. Just go to the website www.timeforanawakening.com, use the search portal, and put in the keyword elders.
Welcome, everybody. We're back from our break, and we have an interesting discussion here about what contributes to violence. And in this second part of our program, we hope that we're going to dig into what we can do to prevent the violence. And there's some folks who've already started thinking about it in a very serious manner. And we have with us Brother Zachary Johnson, who has been thinking about what can be done to prevent the violence. Brother Charles, Brother Kojo, let us pursue this discussion that we've had on what can we do to prevent the violence.
Oh, yes, let's pursue that question. We're dwelling in that question, in that inquiry, and I would imagine that there's some people in our listening audience that might have some suggestions, some answers, some insights, some recommendations, and I invite them to call. The call-in number is 215-490-9832. So call us and join in the discussion. 215-490-9832. Share some of your thoughts, some of your ideas and insights. How do we prevent this violence? Is it possible? What do we need to do?
Brother Zachary, you're leading us. What have you come up with? What's this living experiment? What's the living experience in nonviolence?
Well, perhaps the major thing will be research. It's going to take more than one thing. It's going to have to be a mix of things. And one of the reasons we are glad to be here tonight is to invite the community in to join us. Because we don't know everything it is to know. We need the expertise and input from members of the community to share their vision of how we can make a better way to live. If you're interested in becoming part of this effort, you should go to the Living Experiment and Nonviolence Discussion Group on Facebook. You can join in and share your ideas and thoughts. This has to be an ongoing effort. But in direct answer to your questions, there's several things that we're going to try right away. One of the things we're going to try is a healing circle that was actually modeled after the healing circles of the San people in South Africa, who use dance and music to learn how to heal themselves. We want to target co-victims of violence, mothers, daughters, sisters and brothers who lost someone to this pandemic wave of violence. They say for every person that passes from violence, they leave behind 8 to 10 co-victims who are affected for the rest of their lives. And there needs to be some type of effective intervention that can measure and offer support and healing to those people. And we want to draw on our own culture to develop the kind of interventions that will be able to help people.
And I would imagine that, I would imagine that transforming how we do education would be key as well. I wonder, do we have Brother John Santama with us at this time? Are you there, Brother Santama? I know he was supposed to join us at the in the second hour. Yeah, he's determined. Pardon me?
Well, we have number 678923. Do you have a comment or a question for us? 678923.
I would just like to thank you for inviting me to speak. I would also like to encourage our community to be mindful that we have appropriate indigenous African ways and philosophies to work together to solve problems. And we do not have to mirror Eurocentric paradigms of dominance and trying to have power over and injure people.
Thank you for that comment.
Most certainly agree. And
yes.
It's one of the things we've been saying. It's one of the reasons we were so excited to be working with Brother Santama, because they're right there in the land. So we absolutely agree with what the sister had to say. Appreciate that. Thank you.
We also have 770-873. You have a question or comment for us?
Hmm. Well, hopefully, Brother Santama will join us soon. Now, where he is, what's the time? It's like 5 o'clock in the morning, right? Or 4 o'clock in the morning?
So it's 5:15 in the morning.
Oh, okay. So he's going to have to get up extremely early to spend some time with us.
Well, we spoke with him earlier in the day, and he had every intention of being here, so who knows?
Yeah, to say a little more about him, he was motivated to go off and create his own school because he saw the necessity of transforming education in that environment. Now, Uganda is where some people may remember Idi Amin during his era was a very violent situation, and I don't know if they've completely changed, you know, how they handle conflict at this point. But I remember under Idi Amin, it was pretty vicious, pretty violent over there, wasn't it, Zachary?
It was extremely violent. It was extremely violent regime, and I'm sure they're still feeling the after effects of that reign of terror that they went through. And one of the things that's encouraging about this school, there are 400 children that were connected with the school before the COVID hit. And one of the interesting things we've been learning since we've been talking with Brother Sintamu is that their children are facing many of the same challenges our children are facing right here in the United States. For example, one of the options that they had offered was high-speed internet access for people to have, for kids to go to class, but that didn't work very well. And so now we're going on 2 years where a large portion of our young people have had their educational careers completely disrupted.
Good evening.
Because
we have 334-414. Do you have a comment or question for us?
Good evening, everyone. This is Theodore from Montgomery. I just tuned in late, so I'm just going to listen out to the for the rest of the program.
Thank you for being with us.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, Brother Lutz.
Good evening.
And feel free to chime in anytime you feel you want to do, when you want to add to the conversation.
All right, thank you.
Brother Zachary, let you continue.
Oh, well, they're facing the same problems over there. Their school system is still completely shut down. So children aren't going to school, and it's been a long time. And he was very concerned about the fact that they had been so long out of school, and it's going to be hard to get them acclimated to attending school every day again. We just thought that was interesting that two communities so far away are facing similar types of challenges. And so we decided to work together to see if we could find common solutions that could be applied on both sides of the ocean. And that's
The work that he's doing in Uganda is really inspiring. They are building their own facility. Is that right, Zachary?
Absolutely. That's absolutely true.
They're building their own facility from the ground up. And his philosophical approach to education is that every child can learn. Every child can pass, as he says. And that's why he went off and created his own school. Maybe we need to do that here in America. Maybe we need to start creating our own school or modifying what our children are being taught by having, you know, maybe a Saturday school or something to add to what they're being taught, or maybe even get involved with our school districts here in America to make sure that you know our students are learning what they need to learn, learning to think critically, and learning what they need to learn to not only survive, not just to be trained, but to actually be a contribution to the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's going to take the voice of the people to make that happen. Bureaucracies don't change on their own. It's going to take the voice of the grassroots to say we want a more relevant curriculum that reflects the challenges our young people are facing, that fits their needs, not your needs. You know, it's going to take the people to demand that. So we're hoping that we can build on this, that we can begin to create an ongoing dialogue to address all these issues. There's a whole range of issues which are really symptoms of the deeper problem that grows out of the imbalances in society. You know, but we're the ones who are going to have to come up with the solution. People outside of the community aren't going to solve our problems for us.
Now, as you were speaking, I was thinking about that Malcolm X quotation where he says that, you know, education, you know, is involved in that vicious cycle where you get a poor education, you know, you're going to get a poor paying job. You get a poor paying job, you're going to live in a poor neighborhood. And growing up in a poor neighborhood, your kids are going to go to a poor school, and they're going to get a poor education. And so that creates that vicious cycle.
Brother Kwame, I have a question to your guest. I was curious to know, are there any efforts of trying to establish a pen pal relationship across the pond with other brothers and sisters? For example, an exchange of contact information so there could be like a one-to-one correspondence with students here or teachers here with students there or teachers over there. Has there ever been anything like that being done?
I love that idea.
Yeah, you know, you may not be able to capture everyone, but if there was a one-to-one correspondence between students and teachers, maybe that might work, right? You could have a matching or a pairing of individuals, so much so that they could know what we're doing over here and we could know what they're doing over there.
It's more possible now than ever with Zoom and all the technologies that are available. That's something that's very doable, and you don't need $1 million to do it. You just need people
right.
who are willing to invest the time and energy to organize it.
Well, I'm excited about that idea. Go ahead.
I like the idea, and that's certainly something that doesn't take a lot of technology that's already being used to make that happen. And I liked also the point that you're raising that this is something that we have to do ourselves rather
right.
than looking for even the school system to try to do it. And one of the things that I've been working on from all of these conversations, I asked the question, what is a way that might allow for the exchange of some of the historical information, some of the moral teaching, some of the teaching of critical thinking? And the idea that I came up with is certainly something that other people can pursue or emulate, and that's after school care. So there are many people who don't have places for their children to go after school, particularly if their parents work jobs that let off at 5 o'clock or even later. So they are looking for places for their children to go. And I think that each of us, and this is something that I'm getting ready to launch, is make available that after school experience. And it would allow us to review or tutor some of the lessons that were assigned in their traditional classroom. But what I feel real confident of, and I think many of us are in that same position, is that we have learned much that can be offered to other people. I've taught a lot of people how to be doctors. I've taught them how to be a surgeon. So with those kinds of skills and experience that I have, I think that I can, and I have certainly done that with my child and his friends, expose them to another additional thinking, to have. And so I think that many of us could look at doing something of that nature. It doesn't have to be so big. It doesn't have to be so grand. But those of us who feel that we have the temperament, who have something to share, that's one way of reaching out to those parents who might not necessarily be looking for an Afrocentric education for their children, but they are looking for somebody who can be responsible to take care of them when they're not in school until they get back to their parents' home.
Well, I think that's a brilliant idea.
It's a beautiful idea, Dr. James.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Hi, I wanted to share that the idea of pen paling, I remember, was around when I was coming along in school, and we would be very excited when the teachers initiated that process and we would get mail from across the water. But there is also the Black Mayors Association, which I think is now called the African American Mayors Association, where there was city relationships with Black mayors, such like A.J. Cooper from Pritchett, Alabama, or Johnny Ford with Tuskegee, Alabama, that started a while back, where the different cities with Black mayors partnered or teamed with Black communities and like entities in Africa. So it was not only students, but it was cities, so that the learning and relationships could include education as well as entrepreneurship and models for children and for communities to see that we could still work together across the waters to better our position to Pan-Africanism and Afrocentric values and love.
Wow.
I think that's a great idea, not only with the communication, but also I think that it could lend itself to visiting one another. I know how beneficial the experience for me has been to have traveled to Nigeria and to Ghana. And get to meet and visit and stay in the homes of people from Africa. And I got to see things myself, not just the representation that I received. So certainly as they are talking to one another, if they have some avenue which allows that, then travel as well is a possibility.
As you were speaking, Dr. James, I was thinking about how we could also link economically, and I keep thinking about the situation in South Africa where now the land has been given back to the indigenous people, but for 105 years, they didn't own the farms, and they weren't farming the land. They were working as farm workers, of course. But with the Black farmers here in America who have the ingenuity, the technology, and just suppose that there was a link between the Black farmers and farmers on the continent. And not just farm, but other areas of where there could be an economic impact, including cleaning up the water and the pollution as a result of colonialization and raping of the land. Sister Didi, you have something to say? Brother Jack, Johnson, Brother Johnson.
No, go ahead, Sister Didi, please.
Oh, no, I didn't have anything to say. Thank you.
Oh, Well, this has turned into what we had hoped it would be, a think tank where people are bringing their ideas to the table and sharing a vision of what is possible. And this is exciting indeed, because if we put our minds to it, it's going to happen. And if we do these things and create these options for our young people, they will turn to a better way. As many of them will. We can't save the world. We're not naive. We're not going to save everybody. But the ones who, that we can help, we really should.
Yeah, I love that idea. I didn't realize that we had an organization where cities were creating sister city relationships. I have had that idea in my mind for years. I was just thinking, suppose Milwaukee, for example, had a sister city relationship with Newark, New Jersey, just for example. And we could share best practices, and we could put our heads together. Two heads are better than one. Maybe if we could, you know what I'm saying? So, and that idea that one of our listeners just suggested, I think we should follow up on that as well. Someone needs to mute themselves.
770-909.
Someone needs to mute their phone. Mute your phone, please.
I think we're getting some background from 770-909.
You must not be near it. Can you please mute your phone?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to share also that under land grant institutions, I think it was 1890 that focused on historically black colleges and universities, but I may not be totally accurate about that particular piece. There was the desire to do extension so as to further the application of growing different types of crops and uses for the community, such as muscadines. And I know that Tuskegee University used to sponsor a conference on various things with land grants. And even in that, there was the opportunity to do a Pan-African exchange around the use of soil and crops for bettering our communities. So not only was it cities, but there's also been institutions and colleges that have understood the need to partner across the waters with our brothers and sisters for the betterment of our whole African experience.
Well, we need to build on that. Can you imagine? And now that we have Zoom, we can virtually be in communication with people all over the world, all over the African diaspora, because all of us are faced with pretty much the same issues, and these issues were created, as a result of colonialism, imperialism, and this corporate greed. And now that, you know, we can join hands, we have a lot of potential. We have a lot of resources. And if we collaborate and use, you know, the technology of Zoom and other ways to communicate, then we could transform all of this.
We could transform our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't take forever either.
Yeah. But what's so enlightening is that all of these communities worldwide are suffering from the same causes. You know, we pretty much have the same problems.
One of the things that was encouraging about the Good Shepherd a primary school in Uganda, I believe the people that run that school own the land. And that was one of the things they said, and they had plenty of, was land. So who knows what could come out of that. We want to become a center for the research into the power of love. And we want to apply modern science to the ancient principles that our ancestors have practiced for tens of thousands of years. And if we put those two things together, we can build the kind of society that we want to live in. As you just got through saying, we have everything we need already. We just need to channel and plan carefully and set goals and put the work in.
Yeah, the land is so abundant in Africa and it's inexpensive. I have a friend, Princess Ndaba, who was on our show last year. She's from Zambia, and she wrote a book called The Tears of Africa, which I highly recommend. But she just went back to Zambia. They just changed presidents after the election last week. But she said she was going back to buy up some land. And I know she's been working. She has a couple of nonprofit organizations, and they've been working to do something about the problem in the environment where their people have cancer and the babies are dying because of impure drinking water. You know, so they need things like water purification plants. They need clean water. But you know, the copper industry just devastated the land and the environment and their lakes and streams, and just left it as it is right now. And so a lot of these African communities could benefit from our being involved and just being present to what they're up against. You know, we can't help them unless we know. And so the caller from 6689, we talked about the pen pal. Now, there was a brother who mentioned it about having this, you know, ongoing relationship, having a relationship with some of these communities, whether it be based on cities or schools or just individuals.
I wonder if you all have had the opportunity to have Omar Johnson come and talk. I think Omar Johnson has a wonderful vision around the education of our children with regard to not only learning to use their hands and their mind and their connectedness with one another, which was one of the dynamics between, you know, at Tuskegee and Berean, where you have to be able to have a skill or a trade when you graduate, not only just be able to apply book knowledge, and I don't mean the misstate of or or inappropriate represent. But I know Berean does it. I think it was definitely a goal at Tuskegee and some other places. But that's the whole thing about not only do we understand our relationship to Earth, but our relationship to each other as well as knowledge. But he has some wonderful ideas around education for situations where we can't reach across waters, but right here in America, understanding that the Eurocentric paradigm of education is not the only strategy that we have to use to give our children, for modeling the relationships with many of us in the world.
Yeah, he was in Kenosha, Wisconsin last week. Sister Didi, he was...
he was also here in Milwaukee last week. And yes, we are going to try to get Dr. Omar Johnson on the program. Yes, I really love listening to Dr. Omar Johnson. Yes. And he was here in Milwaukee, I believe, last Saturday.
Wow. Well, thank you for mentioning that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
that paradigm. You know, we don't want to just be trained to be slaves working for multinational corporations for $10 or $7 an hour. We want to be educated so that we can think critically, so that we can create a future for ourselves and have our children thrive.
Yes.
The way education is set up right now is designed, you know, to be a trained monkey, basically.
Yes.
Well, I am so encouraged hearing this conversation here, and I'm going to suggest that we build on this. This is the kind of dialogue that needs to happen in the community. And I hope that you all will invite us back as our program gets a little bit more developed, because we do need help. We're a small group, and we're going to need assistance from the community, input from the community. I'm hearing all the brilliant ideas that are being put on the table. I know this is the place we need to be to share what we're trying to do from here on in.
All right, brother. Why don't you share that contact information one more time? You had an email address, and then we're going to have to go to our commercial. We're going to have a short commercial break.
We do have a Facebook page called the Living Experiment and Nonviolent Discussion Group. And if you Google that, you can join in, and you will be a permanent member, and you'll get all the notices that go out in connection with our activities. Living Experiment in Nonviolence Discussion Group on Facebook. We also have a page called America Heals on Facebook. But it's a little easier to find us with the discussion group. That's probably the easiest way right now.
Got it. Yeah, I was just thinking. Go ahead, Dr. James. Was that you?
Yeah, I think we may have our other guest here. Is that Brother John out there?
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Greetings from Uganda.
Yes, Brother John. Thank you for being with us.
I'm sorry, we got the time mixed up.
Say it one more time.
I'm sorry that we got the time mixed up. I thought it was still had some time, only the brother Zaki to remind me.
Yeah, I know it's very, very early there in the morning.
Yeah.
Hold on for a second. We have a short commercial break, and then we'd like to have you join the conversation.
Okay, please.
Okay. So our sponsor again is EDOC Advice. And EDOC Advice provides specific medical answers to those seeking a better understanding about medical conditions and health. We offer our faculty of EDOCs, who are licensed physicians and health professionals who make themselves available to those globally, seeking a better understanding of health issues and the medical profession, medical practice. And other sponsors are welcome too. So if do you know of a service that you want others to know about? Have you written a book? Have you written a book that we may be interested in reading? Or consider becoming a sponsor. And you can do that by emailing the Black Reality Think Tank at sankofa_think@outlook.com. And contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App or either PayPal. Cash App is $NIRVANAINSTI. That's Nirvan Institute. Well, it's $NIRVANA
Nirvana, and then INSTI is short for Institute. So, and then the PayPal is Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Brother John, welcome.
Yes, thank you.
I'm so glad we were talking about you. It was all good, of course, but we were expecting you around 7. But I'm glad that you got here, so we still have about 10 minutes to talk. But people are very interested in why you created your own school.
First of all, I had it to have our own school simply because we needed it to give our children a better way, a holistic way of looking at things beyond being academic only. Because most of the schools here are more academic, yet there is a social responsibility must be carrying out as a school to change the mindsets of the children as they keep working out some things that can change their mind to prepare themselves to be what the citizens who can avoid the violence, who can understand the culture, the traditions, and appreciate the differences. And that at the same time, accept that they have a role to play in their next lives other than excelling, getting academic marks. So we felt that these children, when they are given the right information in our own school, in our own setting, where we have our own standards, it's going to be of help to them and to prepare them for the citizens of today and tomorrow. And we said, okay, that is the way to go. Because the other schools are looking at those who are rich. They aim at helping the rich. They don't aim at helping children as the citizens of tomorrow. So we chose to say, no, let's have our school where we have our own standards, where we can tell the children what we think is the right for them to live as global citizens who look beyond colors, beyond denominations, beyond the economic status, but knowing that their children, their global children, who are going to grow into global citizens. So that's what led us into starting our own school. And we are happy that we are making it and we are doing it. And children, our children are having a difference in the way they look at it.
Yeah, that is so inspiring. And I just want to acknowledge you for taking the responsibility of creating education that works for your children so that they can build a better future and so they can read and write and think critically. And your story should be shared with every community in America, especially in my community, where at school board election turnout, we only have 10% participation. Only 10% of the people who can vote to elect our school directors actually turn out to vote. That's the kind of involvement that we have here in my community here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So if we could take more responsibility for our children's education like you did and follow your lead, you actually built your own school.
Yeah.
From scratch.
Exactly. And we are having the model of making sure that the children are helped by both the school and the parents. But unless parents come on board, our children will never have to learn what they need to learn. Because it's not only the school that can shape the understanding of the child, but even the parent has a role to play. A brother, a sister, a neighbor has a role to play in the well-being of a child, not only a teacher. So parents should, and now we are coming up with a program of these children learning from their homes. not only waiting for the schools, as the schools are now right closed because of the COVID-19, then we need to find out what exactly can be done without going to school. And this is a very fertile ground for the children to come on board, I mean parents to come on board and prepare their children the way they should be prepared to leave, not only to wait for the teachers to be coming, how their children are going to leave.
You know, before you came on, one of the callers called, and actually it was two callers, and they were talking about having a pen pal relationship with the school in America. Say, for example, your school could have a sister school in America, and your students would be in communication with students here in America, and they could share their experiences and ideas and maybe even support each other in some ways. What do you think about that idea?
I think I appreciate that, and it brings out the theme of our children being prepared to be global citizens. So they can reach out to different children, they can exchange information, learn from each other, because we do believe that these children are also the best teachers in their own way. If you don't deal with a child, then you can't learn a lot from the child. But the moment you accept to deal with a child, there's a lot to learn. And these children can teach themselves well. So children of this Uganda can learn from the children of the other side, and the children of America can also learn from the Ugandan children. So that kind of exchange brings in the wealth of ideas between the children, understanding each other from far, and connecting to each other from far. It's been good. We are now having the technology. We can have Zoom calls, can have letter writing, and all that brings together these children. I really welcome that idea.
Wow. I know if some of the students knew how committed your students are, who have to struggle to get education, and they don't have the best facilities, and you're still in the process of building your school. If some of the students here knew what the experiences were there in Uganda, I think it would have an impact on them.
Absolutely.
Also, in the Bible it says you don't have to worry about the Ten Commandments because all you need is two. And the two most basic of the Ten Commandments is to love God and to love thy neighbor as thyself. Now, with the technology we have, our neighbor is Uganda. And if we love and if we love you, then that means that we're going to be engaged in activities to support you. And vice versa.
Charles, we have a caller at 760-672-760-672.
Please.
Do you have a question or comment for us?
No, I was just becoming aware of your program today, and I am here to listen. Thank you. I'm calling in from San Diego, California.
We appreciate that you're calling in to us today.
My pleasure. My friend from Atlanta, Georgia, informed me, and she sent me your number. Thank you.
Come back again.
We will. Thank you.
Was there anything that that you heard in the conversation was inspiring or motivating or had an impact on you in any way?
Yes. I'm also from a different country. I'm from South America. And when you were talking about the pen pal link among students or a school here, we need to be mindful that when we are exposed, when our brain is exposed to bigger and better things, we don't want to regress or we don't want to stay in our country. So we need to focus on what the obtained goal would be, because after a while, the only solution to a problem when we are in third world countries is let's get to America and we see what our refugee problem is here. So I think before starting something like that, let's have some clear goals and boundaries of what the attained result or solution or goal would be.
Yes, thank you. We need to have an intention, and it should be well thought out. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're at that time where we are preparing to say our goodbyes.
Yes, it's time to close. And just want to thank the listening audience for providing a community of listening. And for those of you who chimed in and got involved in the discussion, thank you. And please continue to listen. So we really appreciate you, and we value your input.
Yes.
The opportunity.
So we're going to say good night. It's time to go. I know we have more to talk about, but we have to save it for another session.
Yes. Well, thank you for the invitation and the program and the knowledge.
Well, Stan, thank you for your input as well.
Yes, thank you so much.
Asante Sana Uhuru.
Asante Sara. Asante Sara.
Asante Sana.
Asante Sana.
Ha 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 ha.